This is Infants on Thrones, philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Hey there, welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and you know what? Infants on Thrones is changing. Maybe for the better, maybe for the worse, but after 5 years, nearly 400 episodes, and 4.3 million total downloads, it's time to make a few changes. And what a better time to start the first wave of these changes than on an episode about outrage. So a few months ago, we broke our long-standing no monetization policy and began accepting PayPal donations. Thank you very much to all of you who donated. We're going to keep that PayPal option open. But beginning today, we will also be publishing content through Patreon. Now, we're new to Patreon, and it's going to take us a while to figure out exactly how to use this thing, but we're going to take a ready, fire, aim approach and follow the sage advice of our dear departed prophet, seer, and revelator, Spencer W. Kimball, and just do it. And I think a shoe company borrowed that from President Kimball at one point, too. So anyway, today's discussion about outrage is going to be another freebie for you. But the after discussion portion, which is about an hour of discussion, where we talk about advice that we would give to outgoing missionaries and actually break into our old mission journals and start reading entries to each other. Now, that after discussion content will only be available to Patreon subscribers. So we'll put a link to our Patreon page on our website, and you can go to Patreon and see what it takes to become a Patreon subscriber. There's different tier levels. There's different associated rewards with each tier level. And you can see some of the cool things that we have in store for our Patreon followers. And we'll have more to say about this in future episodes. But for now, let's listen to myself, Matt, Bob, Tom, and Jake in a super fun, sort of throwback, classic infant-style discussion about outrage. Enjoy.
Okay, yeah, I'll start recording now.
I'm working on a little surprise for your Mormon creds, Gail Bob.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Like teasing right now, yeah.
Wait, do I get to hear it or be part of it? Or is it just going to be like, bam, smack in the face,
yeah,
right before like, Sunstone?
Boom.
Deal with that.
No, I'll tell you what it is. I want to come up with my end-to-end Exmo scale.
Oh,
Matt's Exmo scale.
I go for it, I guess, but I feel...
Which should include the Bob's Mormon cred scale, but then have the experience of leaving the church as part of the end-to-end.
No, there is this Exmo cred, right?
Right. But you can't have Exmo cred if you didn't start with Mormon cred. You know, like that would affect
your... Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the precursor to...
Right.
First of all, you have to have a 70 or above on Bob's Mormon cred scale. Yeah. Otherwise, no Exmo cred.
Oh,
yeah.
You know what, though? Like, when I was listening back to it, and I think our listeners as well, you get too caught up on the points. And, you know, one of the things that I missed of what you were going for originally, Bob, was that the points are really just a means to an end, and the end is to put you in one of these three categories. And so it doesn't really matter if you're at 85 or you're at 70. You know, if you're in one of these categories, it just means that you've experienced most of what there is to experience in Mormonism. You know?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no, you're totally spot on.
I do think, however, that there should be like some handicap questions, because even like there's still you're missing the female Mormon experience, and which men aren't going to experience, but there's way more male experiences in the church that women just are completely excluded from. So there's got to be some kind of like handicap that they could still be in that same category for what was available to, but I don't know.
Maybe handicap is not the right word. It's like we're gonna put on the.
Is there like a less
the
charged?
And then we'll.
We can.
Yeah, but my memory.
Get good parking spots.
My memory was is that by having it weighted to be in favor of men, that in and of itself was a Mormon experience. So it was really kind of
yeah, yeah. Yes. So it's not going to completely go away. There's not going to be a forced, you know, plus 50 if you're a woman, because we love you. that's bullshit.
No, because we love you, but because
I'm being facetious. I'm just saying it's a fair point, and I think it can be taken two different ways. One is intrinsically the church is sexist, so by definition, Mormon credit is going to go to men because that's just how the church functions. But at the same time, that's not completely fair via a different metric, which is, well, women, independent of the church being sexist, have their own Mormon experience, which is just as valid. So that shouldn't be ignored either. So I think there's a way to kind of playfully cover both grounds at the same time, to where technically it'll still be a little sexist, but not as bad as the Mormon church version. We'll see. I'm working on it.
Cool. Can I tell you my favorite part, Bob?
Sure.
It's how serious you're taking it.
I know.
Bob's like, you know, this is kind of a big deal, you know, with this. Wait, let me do Bob. You know, I have this poll that has gotten over 7,000 views, and that's really important, even though I'd like to pretend that I'm not making it a big deal.
I'm self-aware.
That is a terrible Bob impersonation, Matt. I just
thank you,
say,
Glenn. Geez. Thank you. I know what you're going for Matt, but I'm with Glenn. But in spirit, there's plenty of truth there. I mean, it's my 15 minutes of fame that's stretched over a year. What am I going to do?
No, but you are plenty self-reflective. You know, you put in enough like little barbs directed to yourself there. You're fine.
Okay.
I do like the exactness that you have, that you display with like figuring out exactly how. I mean, there's no half ass with Bob. Bob is full ass.
No. Yeah. It's that same. It's like when Bob Mormon cred scale comes in, Bob becomes God Bob. It's like, yeah. I
was Darth Vader.
Right. It's great. I like it. He takes on this even more of a persona than he.
I find your lack of cred disturbing.
Yeah,
that was good. I like that.
Thanks. That was good. Yeah. And I got to say,
I want to say sorry, John DeLynn, or something, because did you get my little note?
Yeah, I did. But you know, and that was me adding that in for Matt's sake, because Matt's been filling my head with John DeLynn being a televangelist for the last week. And so that's why I put in the televangelist clip and did that whole thing. You know, it was really like a little secret love note to Matt in plain view. But yeah,
I thought it was funny, but I wanted to just, for the record, throw the CES letter guy under the bus equally, at least. So,
but there was nothing in there that indicated that would be like a Jeremy Runnels dig, and especially when you said too soon. You know, that like the too soon referring to DeLynn and you know, Christy Money and Kate Kelly.
I know this is all like super interesting and cryptic, but I guess I just wanted to say, like, I, in semi seriousness, I think DeLynn has more of a leg to stand on in terms of validity associated with making a life out of this and having to support himself through ex-Mormon podcasting or whatever. Whereas, what's the other guy's name? Sorry, I don't mean this offensively, but I really can't remember his name.
Jeremy Reynolds.
Jeremy Reynolds. He seems like a fine dude, but he's the one who was like overnight, like, what? My thing got downloaded a lot. How can I get money out of it? At least that's the impression I got. So that was more what I was going for, but it was totally not clear. So,
well, it's funny you say that, Bob, because one of the lists on the, or one of the questions on the Matt's Exmo cred scale is
CES letter.
If you did not use the CES letter, that gives you more cred.
Hey, I like it. That's
that
good.
Stuff was already out there at Mormon Think and other places. So if you had to go, you know, you didn't use the attorney to resign. You actually had to go through the process of resigning.
You had to do legwork for yourself. Research. Go to CESletter.com. That's bullshit.
That's not Exmo cred. That's grumpy old man Exmo cred. All you're doing is drawing a line
You're right, but there's
it's a generational divide of, you know, like, we left the church pre-CES letter.
First,
so
yeah.
You know, big deal.
Yeah. Dude, I was into Green Day before Dookie, dude. I was into Green Day way before Dookie.
Right. But that's exactly what that is.
Cool. Awesome. So what are we talking about today?
Is Jake on?
I am here. I'm sorry. I just, I guess I don't really have a lot of infant cred right now. I gotta
step it up.
You joined after the four of us. So that's true.
Yeah. That's yeah. All right.
Am I leading this, Matt? Yeah.
Okay. So I want to tell you guys a story. I want to tell me if this gets you, if this is something of interest to you. There was this dude that was next door and this neighbor to a kids party of one of those bounce houses, right? And this neighbor comes over and unplugs the bounce house and it deflates. Is that crazy?
Just out of the blue?
Yeah. The guy's just an asshole. And he goes over and he unhooks the bounce house.
Were you the one that was unhooking it, or were you the one that was upset about it?
No. This was something that came across my feed on Facebook like three different times. And I like clicked on it. It was like, wait a minute, what is this story and how many people are involved? And it started to kind of become this, it was shared on a couple of different pages that I follow. And then I reflected and thought, holy shit, I just spent some time reading about the most mundane neighbor dispute.
Right. That wouldn't even be an interesting story if you knew if you heard it from somebody that was there.
Right.
Like if somebody that was there told you that story, you'd be like, oh God, when is this going to end?
Like I was doing, like, you're like, man, Matt, that's not an interesting story.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was so angry at myself that I got sucked into the clickbait and realized that not only did I spend the time reading about this story but a whole bunch of other people commented on it. And I started reading the comments and I don't know how much time I spent, but that's freaking time I will never get back.
And now you've inflicted that upon dozens and dozens of listeners.
Yeah, right. We're just passing along the misery.
We're this far in. How did it end? Come on. I'll be the one.
How it ended is me feeling really bad about my online habits.
Is it bad if I'm Googling the story right now? Like, man deflates bouncy house neighbor.
I'm just picturing Matt in the shower like, oh, I'm so embarrassed with myself.
I really was. But that led me to think about that. Well, that wasn't the one that did, but I was noticing after the Kathy Griffin thing, how much bullshit is out there that people just get sucked into and get focused on and talk about that really doesn't seem to matter in their lives. And it certainly doesn't matter in my lives or in my life. So that's what I wanted to talk about is online behaviors and outrage, things we get outraged about that aren't.
Outrageous, or, Matt. That is outrageous.
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 Yeah.
And one way that I don't remember when we were first floating this idea, this topic, I don't remember who was that brought this up, but I think that some way that it becomes like especially relevant for us is when listeners approach us with some articles like, can you believe some guy in Layton wrote a blog post that said XYZ, you know? And like part of me is like, I get why that's annoying, but who the fuck cares, you know? Like it's a guy in Layton, you know? Like I don't know, it's so this whole I think that the X-Forum community is definitely susceptible to this kind of outrage cycle that you're talking about, where
yeah, finding something real fringy and niche, just like you said, some dude. Can you believe there's a dude that, you know, can you believe this neighbor did this? Yeah, no, there's assholes all out there. I can totally believe that, but I guess we could talk about that or the Exmo stuff or the, you know, some Mormon, the alt-right Mormon lady that's getting a lot of attention or attention.
Explain. Who's this? I don't know what you're talking about.
So some lady is... like,
yeah, she's got a blog racist called Nordic. It's Nordic Sunrise. She's a white supremacist blogger.
No, seriously, she really is a white supremacist.
Yeah, no, she's like okay. Yeah, I mean, she's a white supremacist. And she you know writes about how like James the Mormon is free. And
seriously?
Yeah, she actually has like a YouTube channel. She has a video on. Well, see, I think that's at the core of what Matt is talking about. I don't think she should. I don't think that, but I think that like in part she does just because she feeds this kind of cycle of outrage. I think that like a big portion of the traffic that's been driven, you know, to her site is probably by people that are outraged by whatever she's saying. Can you believe so-and-so saying this? And then somebody goes there. I don't know. So basically her notoriety is like driven by the outrage that she can inspire.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. This topic is hard for me because there's certain triggers, I guess you could say, that I have where I feel like, well, that is deserved of outrage. Right. And based on my preconceived way of how people should be outraged, that one is approved by Bob, you know, and then other ones I'm like, why do you guys think that's a big deal? And then they can just
Bob outrage scale.
Yeah, there we go. I'm working on it. Yeah.
No, but I thought the same thing, Bob, because I piss myself off because I'm prone to be outraged at things like that. I've reflected that I've lived a lot of my life in just bitching about injustice and can you believe this person did this? And can you believe, you know, I do that in work and, you know, because of,
yeah,
you can always find some horrible thing either when I, you know, in the law or somebody that does this. And I've fallen into that trap a lot. And at some point I've got just outrage fatigue where it's like, do I have to care about that anymore? No, I don't want to care about that now. And often I'll call, I've found a number of times recently, I'll call either Glenn or Scott and be like, hey, I want to talk about this. Can you believe? And their response is, yeah. Uh-huh. It's like, well, no, you come join me in my outrage and then we will get outraged together and we'll have this fun ranty conversation. And it kind of goes over like a fart in church and I think, all right, I guess I don't need to be worked up anymore, but I was finding myself do that a lot, or doing that a lot. And I'm noticing it a lot more I wasn't noticing about it. It was shown to me by listening to that, was it the Google ethicist that was on? He was on like Sam Harris previously on about what technology is doing to us, and he was also on Bill Maher, I think on the infamous N-word episode. Yeah. But the stuff that he said was just so compelling. We're just talking about how these advertisers and social media companies and these apps, whatever the app is, are all vying for our attention. You know what he calls the attention economy or the economy of attention, and. Right. That's the only thing one of the things that's so truly scarce. You only have this many hours or this many minutes and they want your eyeballs on it. And so as a result, they're feeding us what will get the clicks and the attention. And then that feeds the clickbait that certainly probably is what caused me to click on the stupid neighbor squabble about a nothing deflated bounce house. And right. And it really caused me to reflect on, is this how I'm spending my time? You know, I can lose an hour looking at stuff that just doesn't affect me at all. And yet it is successfully garnering an emotional reaction from me. But then when I take a minute and think, it's with this, the bounce house was a great one for me, is wait a minute, this is just a dumb neighbor dispute that happens all the time that really if affected nobody.
And so you would acknowledge that it's not pertinent to your salvation.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Man.
All right.
I
totally agree with what you're saying. But on the other hand, I feel like I don't know. I mean, isn't kind of the point of expanding your, like, at some point you should probably expand beyond like caring about things that don't necessarily affect you directly. But
no, I yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I get
you mean that, like not... things that are happening in you know, poverty in other countries, because it doesn't affect me, I should just not care.
Right. Right. I mean, I guess. Right.
Well, so, but at
that's
the same
probably
time,
a straw man. And it's stupid.
But the other straw man on the other side is, what's the name of your mayor or your local representative? Do you know anything about your neighborhood while you're worried about the Sudan? You know, it's like, there is some truth to this. Like, what's the worst case scenario of suffering in the world? And let me garner my attention. Let me focus on that where I can really have little impact based on where I am and ignore any of the problems around me. I'm not saying I'm good at either of them, but if you're going to make a case for, you know, suffering porn and hunting out the worst case. I mean, maybe that's not the best way to live either. Even if you do think there's things you can do to help in some way, stick with what you can control, with what's around you, with what's in your backyard, right? Isn't that a better approach?
Well, I think there's certainly an argument for that.
But I also think that there's a critique to social media kind of underlying all this, you know, because so many people, whether it's companies or advertisers or even just, you know, your friends and family that want to share something because they want to get likes and comments. And so they obviously think, I got to put something out there that's going to garner some attention or some response. So, you know, I'm going to talk about, you know, my uncle who, you know, molested me when I was younger or something like that. I don't know. They're going to post some photo of some injustice, like you said, Matt. But I also get sucked in when I see or hear of an injustice that I feel like I can either contribute to or at least help. I don't know why it is. I assume it's some sort of like biological reaction, like, well, fuck this, like grab your pitchforks and torches. Let's fix this. I don't necessarily think that's always helpful, especially with social media when you hear about, you know, oh, you know, women still aren't getting paid enough, or if it's, you know, children are getting, you know, sold into sex slavery or whatever. Like, okay, well then what can I do? Oh, I guess I can just get on Twitter and get 140 characters out there. That'll fix it.
Right.
I don't know.
Hey guys, what do you think the over under is for John Hamer cringe moments? If he ever listens back to this conversation.
What the hell are you talking about?
What?
John Hamer cringe moments.
Okay, what are you talking about? What are some of the cringe moments you think John Hamer would be cringe
about?
No,
if we're like these five white guys talking about the world's problems, or, you know, women, the gender gap in pay, you know, like the ways that we talk about things, the ways that we say
houses,
them.
Yeah.
Right. Did you not pay attention, Tom, to that massive email thread that we had, you know, what was it, Bob, a week ago? Like just going back and forth about the, you know, cringeworthy stuff. I don't know. We don't need to keep this in.
Well, I'd like the record to reflect I did not mention pay gap. I think that was Tom or Bob.
That was Tom.
I only mentioned.
I was an innocent observer. I was not on the computer.
Matt picked from the issues on the approved list.
My position is on bounce houses. Yeah.
Well, see, but by invoking that, Glenn, of course, you're stirring the pot a bit because. It's hard for me not to comment, because isn't that part of the situation out there? There's certain buckets of topics that are like, this one only talk in person and among friends. This one never bring up with your family. This one's allowed on social media because we all agree we can be outraged about this together. This one you cannot deviate from the confirmed appropriate position of you know, whatever the liberal standard approach is. And that can like drive me insane, where like if I don't correlate myself to the words that have already been pre-written for me on the topic, then I don't have anything valuable to say, because you automatically get the high ground in terms of morality based on what? Based on a conversation that can never happen because it's already happened? I don't get it.
I think it's just the way that you have to be careful about how you talk about certain things. And I don't know. And I'm not.
No,
then I get like all bent out of shape.
I appreciate that you're not sometimes, and I guess what I'm trying to say is you still have something to say, even if you don't say it in the most carefully crafted way.
Right.
That doesn't invalidate an opinion or an approach. I'm sick of people taking the moral high ground because they think they implicitly have it without saying anything because of something they heard on social media, rather than using their own words to have a differing point of view instead of deflecting what they're hearing from others by saying, well, I heard from somebody else that that's outrageous, so I win, you lose, let's not have a conversation, but I'd like to point the finger at you. Yeah. That's the kind of bullshit that is just, I hate.
Well, and not just that, but like the tone police and the word police coming out of the freaking woodwork, just coming at you and saying, well, you know, what was it? There was a comment on the website, like, can we just stop saying this word once and for all? I'm like, well... So now you're the freaking tone police? You're the word police? You're going to correct everybody else according to what? Some standard that he or she has?
Right. I mean, we could dig into that. That's a good use case, actually. I could pull a Glenn and take one comment out of context and make a whole episode out of it. Just kidding, Glenn. I'm...
That was a little real.
I'm sorry.
You know what, Bob?
We're in the right place to make that kind of comment.
I would love it if you started doing that. You should. We would have way more Bob content if you did that.
That's a fair point. And notice I didn't comment on the quality of your content. It's good a lot of times when you do that. It's just funny that... Now I'm just digging a hole.
Somebody give Bob a shovel. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think it's a good use case. So there was this person who commented on our latest episode on Zach and Friends and Mormon Cred, who said, can we not just collectively all agree that we should never say blacks again? And I was like, no, we can't collect. I need a little bit more from you, dude, to understand how that's a thing. Like, just because, again, you feign moral outrage and have a position that I've never heard of doesn't mean that I have to succumb to the first person on the internet who has that position. There might be some validity behind it, but you still have to do the homework of positioning yourself in a compelling way and explaining what it is. And he never really did. Of course, I still feel bad about it because anything that's like race related, the default white dude response is to say, well, I don't know if it's accurate, but some random person on the internet said that I said a bad thing. So I must have, but then I'm like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. So it's frustrating because then you don't have the real conversation. You're just having the surface level outrage conversation.
Yeah. Well, an example of that that's also kind of racially based, if I dare wade into it, was the one that I thought about. So there the two incidents that happened. I talked about Kathy. Is it Griffith? Is her name Griffith or Griffin?
I'm going to have to go to my IMDb for Suddenly Susan.
Kathy Griffin. It's with an I.
I'm stealing my bit.
I am. That made me laugh so hard, Matt. Do it. Do it.
Yeah.
Get it over with.
I came
up
and I said, wait a minute. Are we talking about the supporting character from Suddenly Susan?
I laughed.
That's
so
the only
hard
thing I knew her from.
Wait, the receptionist from Suddenly
But
Susan?
Didn't she have a show in the 90s, though? Kathy Griffith show?
I just remember her Seinfeld cameos. That's all.
Oh, she did have the Seinfeld. But that happened, and I remember thinking, I really just like, are we really care what this woman did? Of course she did something stupid and outrageous and not very thought out and not real clever.
You're being super dismissive. I mean, I'm sure she has a following, Matt. Come on.
But that's a good point. But to me, it was okay. I have to get outraged because either one way or the other, right? Like I must condemn her as someone who does not support Trump because that will show how enlightened I am. Or I must, or just be outraged over. Whereas I was just like, yeah, I don't care. I don't. People do stupid stuff all the time, and people do things I think are wrongheaded and a lot of times they are people like her, and we get worked up over Gwyneth Paltrow and her steamy vagina. And
okay, but you don't think that she crossed the line? You don't think that she implied a direct threat?
No, okay,
of violence to the president.
See, I'm already spending more time on Suddenly Susan than I want to, but yeah, I guess if I break it down, yes, that's not good art. It's not everything I said, not clever, not interesting, not.
What about criminal? What about criminal?
No. See, this is where we go too far. I mean, just
right.
It was clearly art. It was clearly an attempt at being art,
provocative,
or
yeah.
Provocative. And I mean, it's kind of the Sam Harris. If Betty White shows up, I don't need to screen her. If Kathy Griffin holds his head, I don't need to head an investigation to see if she's personally threatening the life of the president. That's just that. Let's not get let's not get ridiculous. When Ted Nugent got on stage and with his gun and started talking about how, yeah, Hillary, eat on this thing or suck on this thing. Yeah, it was over the top. It was bad form. It was bad taste. But it was Ted freaking Nugent. It was this. It was a guy that was in damn Yankees.
Yeah.
He couldn't even find a real band.
The Nugent is not going to show up at the White House and fucking wherever she is.
He's got cat scratch fever, dude.
Yeah, so all right. It was easy to dismiss him. It was easy to dismiss Griffith or Griffin. And And but again, it was
all right. We got to put this to bed. What is your fucking name?
It's Griffin.
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 I am.
Kathy Gryffindor.
Yeah. Okay, like Peter Griffin, like the Family Guy. Okay, I'm in. So how many stupid references can we make?
So Gryffindor, yeah.
There was a number of people that were, "Hey, you Hillary supporters, why aren't you condemning this?" And my response was, "Cause I don't care. You don't force me to take a position." And so that was one of them. And then the other one was the burrito appropriators, the racial appropriator burrito ladies in Portland, where people got up in arms because they started a burrito place and they said that they were appropriating Mexican culture.
Holy hell, dude. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know that one. That's crazy.
you really
I'm fairly rolling some maybe
Matt spends far too much time on Facebook clicking on outrageous stories, which perpetuates the outrageous stories that come up in his feed.
It's my fault. Well, they are somehow coming onto my radar and I'm not seeking them out, but that was another one where I'll call them Trump supporters, because it does seem to be, they say, "See, this is an example of the regressive left. And this is why, here's an example." So they take an extreme example and then try to apply it to, a larger group. And that's happening more and more and more as I see it I say both sides as if there's only two sides, because we're forced to take a fucking side politically. And especially now, but we've always been there, but never before have we, it seems that every single thing is politicized. "Hey, do you like Russell Brand? Oh, Russell Brand, it's only if you're a Hillary supporter," or, just stupid shit like that.
I hate that. That's why I always am quick to point out, like, I identify as a left-leaning independent, and I've stuck by that for 10 years, because I just hate it when people are like, "Are you Republican or Democrat?" And I'm like, "Neither, neener, neener." That doesn't really get very far, though. Nobody cares what I think either.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I totally get, I agree. The thing is, I agree with what you're saying.
But
and I think that, I don't know. I see the value of. I think a lot of this comes from people that are, as they become exposed to kind of liberal arts education. I don't mean liberal politically, but I just mean liberal arts education in general, of the notion of, let's dive deep into the subtextual themes of something that we see, and let's deconstruct this piece of art, let's deconstruct this piece of literature. And I think you get to a point where you start seeing subtle allusions to these harmful ideas everywhere. And it's hard to be okay, at what point does it become something that you can really point at and say, "Oh, this is a problem," versus something where it's, I don't know, was that just a bad joke?
Are you saying that sometimes a cigar is just a cigar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, well, it's hard to know. And I feel like there's definitely a piece of there's a warm fuzzy that I've gotten in the past of people that talk about, "Oh, well, so-and-so was, when Mormons that loved that reverence for the founding fathers, and as you left Mormonism, being the guy who was well, Jefferson had slaves and blah, blah," it was nice to be shit on people that everybody liked, that have all these, that have that little piece of well, you like this thing, but really it's stupid and bad, and but I don't know if that's really helpful at all, because it seems like basically everything gets stopped before it can get started, because, there's some implicit, racism in this thing that you're saying, and so you can't ever, you can't scrub every single bias away. So,
What's funny, Jake, is I can't tell if this is an argument criticizing what we're doing now or criticizing what we're already criticizing. Maybe it's the same thing. I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
I'm outraged at all the outrage out there.
How dare you? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm dangerously close to just disappearing up my own asshole at this point.
But it's a convoluted thing. Like I can see why somebody would make the argument about being, you know, the discussion about like cultural appropriation. You know, in general, I can see people making that argument, but then it gets to the point where, you know, it reaches like kind of this viral threshold, and then all of a sudden there's like politicized action that's taken about this happened in the X-Worm community. There's somebody, I'm actually Facebook friends with her, I don't remember her name, but she like put rainbow colored Christmas lights on her bushes because her neighbor
Lexi.
So she put the Christmas lights on her bushes because like her neighbor's a homophobe or some shit.
It was funny. Shout out to Lexi, she's cool.
But it was just kind of a funny thing. But then it like hit this moment where like I started seeing it shared all over the place, and there was some like Huffington Post thing where it's like, you'll never believe what this housewife did for striking everything that we do is so endowed with nobility. It's like, oh, she was striking at the heart of homophobia. No, she put fucking Christmas lights up, you know, like it was just a funny, like knowing her, it was just like kind of a funny like joke where the joke is kind of, you don't really know if they did it seriously or like do they know that that's what they're doing. And it got to the point where like everything, I guess I am arguing for what Matt's arguing for. All right, I made up my mind.
Well, if I can try to quantify it, you know, out of my own ass as well. Doesn't it feel like there's a certain, we don't have to agree on it today, but like you get like one outrage post per five or six of something else you need to say on Facebook. Like if you hit more than 20% outrage, then maybe you got to see a therapist, or you got to just channel your energy into something that's like into a box that nobody needs to see. Like everybody gets their outrage quota, and it just feels like it's just a little too high and we need to tone it back a little bit. And I don't know the numbers, but I kind of want to make it up because it's fun. But I think that's kind of what you're, I think that's what Matt's getting out of it a little bit with his point here. I don't know, well, Matt, if I'm mischaracterizing.
If you want to take it into the ex-Mormon circles, I mean, every 6 months, there's a bunch of ex-Mormons that lose their shit over stuff that's being said at General Conference.
Yeah, and it's always there if you want to find it. Yeah,
it's always there. And sometimes I'll be like, Lord, what did this apostle say that's just triggering all these ex-Mos? And then I sort of read part of the talk or I listen to it. I'm like, that was just as benign as all the other stuff.
All right. Mostly right. Quotes from another apostle.
Is that what triggered your guru thing?
What? Oh, yeah, it was actually.
I was watching all
that outrage. I'm like, you guys just need to chill the fuck out. Yeah. Breathe. You guys are forgetting to breathe. You're forgetting to, you know, pull your heads out of your ass. You know, just. Yeah.
That being said. I want to acknowledge real trauma and people experiencing things. We're not trying to dismiss that. Tom, I mean, you're as sensitive. You deal with people's pain more than I do, and people transitioning. So I know you're not doing that. I guess I want to say that because I can hear somebody in there, but this is real. No, I get it, but I think the point is straining at things to be outraged over. Can you believe this person thinks the Book of Mormon is like literal and historical? Yeah, that's kind of the program.
But that's the right. Whole thing is it's just striking a healthy balance. Like everybody's going to have their moments of outrage, and I'm not we're not trying to devalue that at all. It's like, and, hey, you know, go through your angry phrase, you know, just let it out, vent. But, you know, at some point, if you've been doing it for several months or years on end, you know, you got to get yourself a friggin' hobby or something. You know, you got.
Yeah. Right. Do it on a podcast.
do a podcast. Yeah,
so, right. Yeah. Okay. That's my question.
Okay.
Yeah. No, go for it.
Yeah. I want to float this idea as to why maybe this is happening. And it's not new because you've got these stories like Chicken Little, The Sky is Falling, or The Boy Who Cried Wolf. And, you know, they all kind of touch on this element of outrage and balance, you know, that there should be balance. So what is it that this outrage brings? And so why is it that people are doing it so much? And I think that it's like outrage has become a currency for social validation. And like if you can express enough outrage in the right things, you're going to have people that come to your side and pat you on the back and say, yeah. And there's this like validation thing that's happening that is actually like a really warm, fuzzy thing. It's a community building thing, an identity building thing.
But it's like making a fart joke and getting a laugh. Like anyone can do that. It's like you got to recognize it's not real.
Clever, like, so it's not clever enough for you?
It's not clever. Just follow the Bob rule. 20%, one out of every five posts, you can be outraged. And then think of something clever to say four out of the other five times. I don't know. I just, you can only do it so many times.
But I'm not saying it should or shouldn't happen. I'm just, I'm wondering, is this the reason why it's happening? And I wanted to, like, do you guys think that there's something to that? Or am I way off for, you know, because now I'm asking for validation.
No, I do think it's a form of tribalism. This is another manifestation of that,
yeah, right.
Which you know which in you know which group you're in by what, by
it's,
what you're.
It's a marker. It's how you can mark your group identity by the things that you get outraged in. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Climate and the way you can tell when that is that there's not really it's not principle based and it's becoming tiresome where. Well, you didn't care about it when insert the opposite thing where something similar happened.
Yeah,
right. You know? We're out of the Paris Agreement. This is the worst thing ever. Well, last year you all were saying how this didn't go far enough, and this was really just an impotent agreement that didn't do anything. It was non-binding. Why do we even care about entering this? See, I'm working on it, Bob.
You're doing pretty well. I like that version. That was good.
Another example of that is you know when this happened or that happened, you weren't outraged and pointing that out. It's another form of tribalism, identity, group in group out group marker, like you say, Glenn. I think that's what it is. And we want to. I mean, the emotion that comes with not just saying this is drawing my attention, but this is garnering an emotional response, you know?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I'll also validate you, Glenn. So good job. But I also think that social media only compounds the problem because so many people use it as an extension of their own ego because it's like, hey, so, because there was somebody that I met the other day. It's like, oh yeah, I've got like 1500 Facebook friends. I'm kind of a big deal. And I was like, well, you know that there's probably two or three that are actual real life friends of yours, right? That's about it. Like, I don't know how that compounds into someone's head. Like, I've got 1500 Facebook friends, so I'm fucking awesome. So, you know, they walk out there with their chest a little bit out, a little bit more, and like, goddamn, I'm pretty hot shit. And it's like only on social media, dude. That's about it.
But yeah, so to what extent do you think that we are part of the problem? I mean, because I'm trying to think. Okay, so I mean, like us, not just as individuals, but as you know, infants on thrones.
The
like
podcast.
our best time, the golden age of infants on thrones was November of 2015, right?
Ah, the solid days.
Right, that was those the heady
right
days.
Right before Heather joined is what you're saying, right?
Oh no, 2015. Then it was 2016. It was whenever the band,
right,
kids
right.
Band.
That's when we were bringing Heather on. I'm just making a joke. It's just a joke. All the outrage.
Don't get outraged.
God damn it!
Try to make your original point, Jake, but now it's jaded.
It's Well. I just feel like she's been with us forever. That's my thing. It's like I didn't even ever think about
it. There wasn't a time where we didn't have Heather. Right?
Exactly. So, you know, those were like, you know, that was when we were really, you know, we hit like peak infants. That was like peak downloads, peak engagement, you know, because it was fed like and then. The fact that a lot of us are kind of drifting away from that anger phase and a lot of us are drifting away further and further from being engaged with the church or being connected to the recently wounded ex-Mormon experience, like I feel like we're kind of drifting away from what the listener base kind of thinks of us as, and not, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's made me think like, well, maybe we have been, they've seen us just as kind of this validation, this validating tribal megaphone to, you know, generate and comment on this outrage that they're feeling, well, you know, and give voice to it.
And that, I think that goes back though to what I was trying to get to with validation, because that's the predominant theme when you read what listeners say, the value of this podcast is for them, is that it makes them feel like they're not alone, that they're not going crazy. And I've got to think of a third one. I just can't come up with one, but you know, that
maybe that's the third thing, not being able to think of a third thing.
But I do think that, at least the ones that have filled out the value survey that I put out there, have said, we're kind of on the same page as you guys. And we like hearing things other than just the Mormonism. And, you know, I think you're right, Jake, and especially right to ask the question, have we been or are we now part of this problem, if we're defining outrage as a problem, which I don't, you know, I mean, we've kind of like flirted with that, but I think there's, you know, valid outrage, and then there's overdoing it. What's the ratio again, Bob? It's like 1 to 5?
1 to 5, yeah.
That's 1 to 5.
Okay.
You know, I was thinking about that, though, as I was thinking about this episode, is, yeah, we are part of the problem, and I was thinking about our SmackDowns and, you know, Jake and the Book of Abraham. I mean, look out. Talk about outrage.
Yes.
But I remember, it seems like there was a couple times we started doing the Meridian Magazine SmackDowns, and kind of collectively we were like, well, yeah, this is just, it is silly, but because of the source, why are we doing this when it's so clearly fringy? And at some point it seems that we made a decision that we're not going to do the low-hanging fruit like that, the Meridian Magazines and those things that, and we do get those sent all the time. Hey, you guys really need to smack this down. And it's not that we're saying it's a bad idea or that it's not SmackDown worthy. It's just not SmackDown worthy.
And it's the Tannehill rule.
Yes.
Like, okay. Yes. Been there, done that. Come on. We can close the circus tent.
We don't need it. Yeah. Bring in Mike to say something.
Although
outrageous.
I do want to talk to Mike again at some point. I've been emailing him back and forth.
Itching for some Mike time.
He's emailing Mike. Jonathan Haidt fan now. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we got to figure this out. But anyway.
Well, I have to ask a question then, because I feel like I want to just absolve myself of guilt by bringing up the fact that in January I did this episode, which was just a diatribe. You guys were in Mexico, and I just like lit into this guy who really outraged me. So I just want to get that out there. And it was just this mini-sode where it just really got to me, because it's just, you guys know that whenever I see any form of hypocrisy, especially so heightened and in the Mormon space, where somebody puts PhD after their name and then uses like the farms method of just talking in circles and not really using any scientific method at all, using their opinion to say, in my experience, da 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 da, and this person didn't do enough research. And you're like, you just said in your experience, you think this, and you discredit the other person for doing what you just did. Like, I just hate that. And so I just get in front of it and sometimes let loose. And I did while you guys were all out of town. And I don't know what my point is, other than to say, I hope that was okay.
Well, so answer me this, Bob. What's your motivation when you get all triggered like that? Is it because you feel like you can actually, I don't know, fix or help him or her see the problem? And so they can become a better person or more enlightened? Like, what,
I think
what
that's,
do you mean?
That's a great question, Tom, because I think your proposed answer was more of a Tom approach, and I just can't admit to it, even though I want to. I really just didn't give a shit about this person. I was like out to just get them and just get the information out there that this is not okay and that this is an awful approach to kind of hide behind pseudoscience and treat it as real science and write super long blog posts that are just total bullshit to, you know, basically point a finger at John DeLynn and say he's to blame for gay suicides. It was just not okay with me, and I just hated it. And so I just wanted to bury the guy. That's the honest truth. And you know, I got a few emails and I got all positive comments on the site, but it was all just reinforcing, maybe, you know, I didn't help anyone because all I was doing was preaching to the choir and making myself feel good. And it was my own version of, yes, yes, pat myself on the back. I'm so
brilliant. You should bury more guys in your path. Yeah, yeah, right.
I think there's nothing wrong with preaching to the choir. But if that's if that becomes all that we're doing and it just becomes like we're just only doing an echo chamber, right. That's where I would have a problem with it. But I one of the things I think we do, and maybe we do too much of, maybe I do too much of, is the kind of self-reflecting, self-doubt. I don't know, is this the right approach or not?
And again,
feedback from listeners comes in and says, no, actually, what you did and what you said was really helpful to me. Thank you for doing that. You know, so I think that there are needs out there that are being met. I think there are reasons to be outraged. And I, you know, if we're talking about the church, and I was thinking about that today, because I had lunch with a listener here, really cool guy. I hope to have him on at some point. But we were kind of talking about this idea of there's really good things in the church. There really are. And some of the best people that he knows, he was saying, are members of the church. He doesn't go to the Mormon church anymore, but he goes to other churches. And he says, you know, like the top 10% of any church, they're going to be kind of awesome people. The bottom 10% are just going to be assholes. But the people in the middle, especially in the Mormon church, are really, really good, decent people that are trying to help each other and trying to do the right things.
Sure.
And so when I started thinking, like, well, so what are we trying to do? Like, I'm not trying to really, like, bring down the church. And we were having a conversation. Would it be possible to go back and to benefit from some of those things? And I think the answer for me is no, just because of my personality type. But I'm losing my train of thought on this. That the reason for the humor and the outrage at stupid things that the church doesn't says isn't to destroy the church, but it's kind of to break the hold of literalness that it has on these really, really good people that are in there. And you know, if there was a way, and I really don't know if there is, I don't think that there is, but if there was a way to be Mormon as a collective community without the cost of entry being literal belief in all of these things that you just can't believe in anymore, it would be a nicer place. It would be a better place. And so to me, outrage at those things that do cause spiritual abuse to people that are inside the church or people that are leaving the church, those deserve to be smacked down and smacked around and have some outrage around that. But I don't think that's the place where we want to stay and always be. You know, there's a place for it, but it shouldn't, you know, I think the ratio is like 1-5. I heard somebody say once.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well,
and it sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah.
And I'd hope that it kind of ebbs and flows, that you're not just, that I'm not just white hot all the time and looking for opportunities to be offended. And but a good example was the policy change that outrage, right?
Yeah, and deservedly and, so. Yeah,
right. And you're thinking, sure, wait, this affects real people and kids and everything that we did through that. You know, it and that'll pop up every once in a while. But because of that, it's like the goalposts have moved a little bit. And so now when somebody says something marginally anti-LGBT, it's kind of like, well, yeah, it's the church. I can't really get worked up now that they use the word, you know, counterfeit again. We already went through that. That's kind of their thing now. You know, that's kind of what they're going for. So it's hard to be outraged every time they do something, especially marginally, you know, anti-LGBT or a little racist, or, you know, it's the light racism, or because they are who we thought they were. So I don't know if that's a bad thing by saying, well, now you're just tolerating bad behavior because, you know, there can be worse, and maybe there's something to that. But I know for me, it's not healthy to be outraged and to feel such emotions that often. And I already run a little hot. I'm already pretty passionate, and tend to get
just emotional. And so I'm trying more and more to check myself and just kind of put your thumb in the air and say, wait a minute, is this worthy of it? Or is it the neighbor with a bounce house? Is it the policy, or is it, and not have the same reaction regardless of, you know, the level of misconduct or wrongdoing that I perceive.
Or another, I agree with you, Matt. And I think one tactic that I try to do sometimes, I don't know how successfully, and it's all just in my own head, but I try to reverse it or find the reciprocal of what's outraging me. So like, if I want to share with somebody this outrageous thing that happened, why not share whatever the reciprocal of that, which is the right approach to how to handle that situation, and just reiterate that, you know, go help this person in need over here, instead of saying how outrageous that person over there called that person a name. And instead of perpetuating that form of whatever that is, try to find the inverse of it that's still conveying the same message, but from the actual helpful perspective. Not that I always do it, but that's at least in my head, I think that I do it, and then I feel good about myself. So,
so what's an example of that? Do you have a time when you feel like you've done that successfully? I think it's a great technique. It's a great advice. I'd like to apply that. I'm wondering if I have the discipline to do it.
So here's a super zoomed out example without getting too specific. I'm a fan of the website Kiva.org, where it's micro lending, where you just give money to people in developing countries in $25 increments, and then you help fund them start their own businesses. So whenever I see, not whenever, because it's not a perfect one-to-one, but instead of like, oh, look how poor people are in this country, I read this article about how these people were kidnapped and how dare the U.S. doesn't have more aid to this country or whatever. I just try to give $25 to some random entrepreneur when I see some bad news. And it just makes me feel like that's doing more help than sharing a story about how bad something is in the world.
Don't worry, Bob. I'll cut that out. Because I know you don't want to like be patting yourself on the back about anything or have anybody accuse you of that. I know you don't. So
you like preemptively saying it for me.
Yeah, I'll do something with that.
God damn it! That's the problem with this topic. Is like you just talk in circles. It's really what you said, Glenn. Where you're like, well, I mean, I want to be self-aware, but then if I'm self-aware, then cut it out. But then I don't want to say this. But then I'm outraged. But then I'm not outraged. And when I'm not, then you're not saying anything. Cut that
but
out
it does too. It does make me wonder, even going back to Matt's original point, why do you get outraged? Isn't possible that one of the motivations is you're actually trying to help, that you're trying to make, whether it's the world better or even a couple people, you know, the burden that they're sharing or going through, like, well, if I could help them somehow.
If you're just sharing an article, I mean, that's the thing, right?
Well, I think that's part of the problems with social media is like, well, if I share it and then I like what they said and then they comment on it, like, okay, well, I put in my two bits and that didn't even, I didn't have to get up from my seat. That was awesome.
Well, I wonder if the outrage comes when you feel just there's nothing you can do. You have no control over a situation, but you feel there's some injustice or wrongdoing, and the only thing to do is rage. The only thing to do is have that emotional response, because otherwise you're impotent to do anything. I mean, I find that in my job, when I have a case and I see something wrong, you know, I'm pretty quiet about it. And I'm just like, all right, motherfucker, let's do this, because I can change things and I know how things are going to go. But right. Then when I have less control over those things, that's when I start getting worked up and will find myself raging about maybe a more abstract problem or wrong that I observe or even conceive that I can do nothing about, you know.
Is that a heightened level of outrage, or is it just like you're hitting the wall of frustration there, where you're just like, I don't have the control, I don't have the ability to actually make an impact on this, so Is that more of it?
I don't know. I see it more as outrage. You know, example I think of is the war on drugs, or you know, the criminalization of of substance abuse. It just it enrages me, and it's because I see suffering and I see the impact on society. But yet I'm so there's nothing I can do about it, and we have so little control over those things. So I don't know. That's not one I'm saying, oh, we should not care about, because that's impacting real people, and that might be one of those in the appropriate place. You know, maybe I need to be. Yeah, I'm morally superior when I take that position, but not when I take another. You know, I'm this is where I start, questioning myself again, and it is I find myself in this loop of this. As we're in this conversation, is that appropriate? Is that it's a challenging conversation. It's a challenging concept for me.
Yeah, I agree.
You agree that it's a challenging concept for Matt?
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Right. I've got it all figured out, but Matt, I understand. I was once like you.
Well, this could be a pretty succinct conversation if we end right here.
It could be. Well, I kind of want to end right here because I was going to ask a question that I wouldn't want in necessarily.
Tom would be like, a podcast under an hour? Way to go, infants!
Means that Glenn's going to add a previous episode on the back end of this show.
Hey, there's room for two extra ones.
That's right.
We'll have a whole Easter egg basket.
I got another topic. We could do a twofer.
Whoa.
What is it?
I want to do like genuine advice you wish you would have gotten before your mission, or advice you would give someone going on a mission.
I had the same question because my nephew just went on his mission, and I don't think that he
got a call. Yeah, same reason.
Yeah, and I was like, what would I really? I mean, I don't think he would be receptive to my, because I'm kind of the.
Brother Jake.
I'm viewed with suspicion a little bit, at least within my family.
A bit of outrage.
Right, a little outrage. Outrage.
So there you go, casual infant listeners. An hour's worth of fun from the infants. And, we'll continue to do this. We're going to keep our podcast available as we've done in the past. We're not going to twist your arms to send us donations. But there's more to this conversation. There's another really great discussion that we had about advice to missionaries and our own mission journal entries that we read to each other. A poem that I wrote in the MTC, Jake revealing some aspects of his missionary self that will absolutely shock and surprise you. Things that you can hear if you become a Patreon subscriber and make the commitment to financially support our creative efforts going forward. So check out our website for more information and become a Patreon supporter of Infants on Thrones today. Thank you.
Hi, this is Nancy from Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Great White North of the United States. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. And if you act fast, you could put your review right next to mine, and we could be buddies. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.